Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Replicant, isn't she?
I'm impressed. How many questions does it usually take to spot one?
I don't get it, Tyrell.
How many questions?
20, 30 cross-referenced.
Took more than 100 for Rachel, didn't it?
She doesn't know.
She's beginning to suspect, I think.
Suspect? How can it not know what it is?
Commerce is our goal here at Tyrell. More human than human is our motto. Rachel is an experiment, nothing more.
Could you tell us what is involved?
Easily. The process is quick and painless. Now, we've constructed other bodies. Bodies that are perfect in composition, concept, construction. Physiologically and psychologically, you'll find that you're just as you are now. But in a different body, a younger body, in the prime of health, physically and emotionally close to perfection. The lifespan of any one of our human receptacles is roughly 112 years.
100?
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. Next, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everyone. Nice to see everybody again. And it is Talking Twilight Zone. 112 years. Wow. I think Betty White's almost there, and Ernest Borgnine, I think they're both almost there by now.
She's got as many shows on during the week. My goodness. She must have about four shows a week.
Good Lord, that is one busy woman, isn't it? And Ernest Borgnine, he's like 99 or something. Jeez, they're getting up there. They really are. Well, we are here today to talk about this, what I thought was a terrific episode, about getting old and also getting old with someone you love, and it is called The Trade-Ins, and it's about an elder. Oh, wait, before I do that, I always forget this, Robert. I do have to give you a chance to do the opening clip.
Well, before that, let's say hello, everybody, and welcome to today's show.
Yeah, hello, everybody. Dave. Welcome to today's show.
Hello.
See what happens 2 weeks?
It's been 2 weeks, you know. We've been through a lot the past 2 weeks.
Bobby's lost his stones. Lynn's lost her marbles.
I've lost my marbles. He's lost his stones.
But yeah, I lost a few marbles of my own, too.
Yeah, okay. I will welcome my co-hosts, Dave and Robert, and, of course, my wonderful husband, Bobby, who's been through a lot this past couple of weeks. Hello, everybody. And Bear Fan Ron. Oh, I'm so gay. Bear Fan Ron. And I'm going to just turn it over to Robert now and let him do the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Mr. and Mrs. John Holt, aging people who slowly and with trembling fingers turn the last pages of a book of life and hope against logic and the preordained that some magic printing press will add to this book another limited edition. But these two senior citizens happen to live in a time of the future when nothing is impossible, even the trading of old bodies for new. Mr. and Mrs. John Holt, in their twilight years, who are about to find that there happens to be a zone with the same name.
Woo! Yeah! Awesome. Okay, folks, so you are going to have to forgive me because, you know, with Bobby, with his kidney stones the past couple of weeks, and, you know, everything that's been going on, I've been a little out of it, but I'm Felix is here. Felix in New Jersey. Oh, well, I'll be back on track now. Felix in New Jersey's here. Bear fan Ron's here, so everything's cool.
Well, maybe, Lynn, you need some calming music. Something tranquil.
Yes.
Just imagine you're on a beach somewhere.
Ooh.
Ooh, riding in the waves. There, feel better now?
Oh, much better, much better.
Good.
Thank you so much. Okay, the trade-ins. Okay, well, you have an elderly couple, John and Marie Holt. And, you know, they realize that they haven't much time left, so they decide to visit a medical center specializing in new technology, body swapping. And the representative for the center, Mr. Vance, tells them that 98% of couples have been very happy with the quality of the swap. But the company does offer a return clause if they change their mind within 60 days afterwards, because the swap can be reversed within that time. Well, the couple decides to trade their aged bodies in for younger models, and to their dismay, the swap will cost $10,000 for both new bodies, and they only have half that amount, $5,000. So the old man, Mr. Holt, he decides to try to earn the rest of the money in a high-stakes poker game. And the soft-hearted dealer, who seems a little gruff and rough at first, but he's not, really, he's very soft-hearted, he sees that the old man put all his money on one hand, and he sees that he's also in great physical pain. So he secretly folds his winning hand to allow John Holt to leave with the same amount of money he started with, the $5,000. Didn't let him lose anything. Mm-hmm.
I'll go ahead and play that clip.
Yes.
I'm going to clean you out, you know that, huh?
Yes, I know, Mr. Faraday. I know, but I'll be all right in a minute. Excuse me, I'm sorry to hold up the game.
No, you're not holding up the game, Pop, but you are taking a big chance. Why do you need the money?
Hmm.
Now, go on, tell me, I'm interested.
You are? You see, Mr. Faraday, I wanted to be young again. Marie and, that's my wife, Marie and I wanted to have new bodies, but it cost $10,000 and we only had half of it, so I thought maybe, but I botched it. I'm no good at this, Mr. Faraday. Not good at anything anymore. Just tired, sick, old, useless man. Not worth anything to anybody.
You're raised, Pop.
You're called Mr. Faraday.
What a pot. Well, you have $5,000 to take home with you.
I have three big ones, Pop.
Bigger than those, Mr. Faraday.
Be my guest.
What made it nice was the long thought out pauses where in the cards he had three kings and the dealer had three aces.
Three aces. Exactly. Yeah, and that was great. I mean, the guy, you know, seemed like the rough, tough, not really rough, tough, but like, you know, the real card shark. He wasn't going to let anybody get away with anything, and he wasn't going to lose his money. But he had some compassion. He turned out to be a soft-hearted guy, had some compassion, and he let the man leave. He saw the pain he was in, you know, and he probably was sitting there thinking, well, someday that could be me. You know, I could be that old someday. So finally, you know, he goes home with the $5,000 and the two of them, John and Marie, decide that John should get the body changed to put an end to his constant pain. And he says he intends, which I believe, he intends to use his young body to earn the money for his wife's change. You know, he's going to work, and he's going to be young again. He's going to work, and he's going to get the money, and he's going to change his wife. But in the end, they realize they can't wait the necessary time for young John to earn the money for, you know, Mrs. Holt's procedure, and then they'd rather be old together than for one of them to be young and the other old. So he opts for the return clause, and his old body is restored, and Mr. and Mrs. Holt depart towards what I guess is an uncertain future, but their love for each other is stronger and younger, I believe.
Probably not too much longer if he had that pain for 7 years.
Yeah. But their love is really strong. So, you know, you got to love the fact that they were so devoted to each other. You know, they just couldn't. They couldn't bear to even wait the short amount of time. Well, you don't even know if it was a short amount of time. That was a lot of money back in those days. An operation like that now, you know, if you were to think of, if we even had that type of, we don't even have that, but I mean, if we had that type of technology, you know, medical technology to do something like that, I mean, something like that would cost $100,000 or more. I mean, that, you know, back then, you're talking $10,000.
Even
back then,
at least. $10 million,
yeah,
at least. Yeah.
Exactly. $100,000, $1 million, God knows what it would cost. You know, look what plastic surgery these days costs, you know, just to get nose jobs and things like that. I mean, it's crazy, but, you know.
Yeah, just look at Joan Rivers.
Oh, my God. Well, she should be bankrupt by now.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, even back in 1963, when you think about it, $10,000 seems a little low for that type of thing. You know, you're swapping bodies, and $10,000, that even seems low for back then. But anyway, I'm gonna let Bobby go ahead.
My goodness, Bobby goes first. That is history in the making. I asked Lynn if I could go first today because this is one episode that consistently gets to me emotionally, and that's unusual for The Twilight Zone because this series is either science fiction or it has scary stories or twist endings or things you don't expect. You very rarely is there anything here to get really quite emotional over. I like this story a lot. I watched it again a couple of days ago, and it never fails to bring a tear to my eyes. But I'm willing to bet it wasn't always that way, although I don't specifically remember it. Back 51 years ago when it first aired, I was a teenager, and it probably brought tears to my eyes then, as in I was bored to tears. After all, here is an old couple wanting to be young again and get new bodies and be healthy, and I was probably thinking to myself, get over it. This happens to everybody. But when you're a teenager, it seems so far away, it isn't worth thinking about. 5 decades later, it's a much different story. Baby boomers especially can relate to this story now that age and the aches and pains and poor health that go with it are sitting right on their shoulders. It's now easy to relate to what is going on here, but it's not only Rod Serling's masterful writing that makes this come alive, but Joseph Schildkraut's masterful performance. This is just some of the best acting of the entire series. Most actors can telegraph pain on screen through histrionics like making pain faces and sounds, but Schildkraut transcends that. From the moment he appears on screen, he's obviously not only in physical pain over his impairments, but emotional pain, because he knows in his heart he simply does not have enough money to make both himself and his beloved wife young and healthy again. Schildkraut was a great actor. He really was. He had a long acting career. Sadly, he died only 2 years after filming this episode. He was only 64, and he died of a heart attack. In this story, he and the woman playing opposite him are much younger than they're supposed to be in the story, and you can tell he's wearing a lot of makeup. But I like what he did here, the way he's hunched over, and he simply looks defeated, that he has no chance at this, and he knows it, but he's going to try anyway, whether it's playing in a card game with gamblers or simply going there and trying to talk the guy into extending them credit. He knows, you can tell that he knows this is doomed to failure. He was a great actor. He's best known for being in the film version of The Diary of Anne Frank, in which he played Anne Frank's father, Otto Frank. He was great in that, too. One of the best actors to ever be around. And he was in The Twilight Zone earlier when he was in Death's Head Revisited. This is a man who really knows how to show emotion. I can't imagine anybody else being in this story but him. I think it would not have been the same. As for the story, there are no real surprises in it. You know in your heart that once it is revealed that only one of them can get young and healthy again, that it's never going to work. When they try it, and his now young bodybuilder stands next to his elderly wife, it simply doesn't look right. And society, even in the future, would be very hard on them to see a young stud like that with an old woman, unless it's his mother. Simply nobody's going to buy it. So it's no surprise when he decides to go back and they walk off with each other, having learned to accept whatever they now face. In my review on the board, I deducted a point from my rating for one or two plot inconsistencies that don't make a lot of sense. One of them is that this company that provides a way back to your youth won't provide any credit or way of paying over time. That seems quite unlikely, even in a futuristic society. Also, why not provide a chance to look not necessarily like a bodybuilder and a model, but simply like an average man and woman at a lesser price, say $2,500 apiece, which they could handle? You know, instead of being that young and that good-looking, oh, we'll send you back to 25 years ago when you were about 50 or 55 or maybe 45. You won't look that good, but you'll be a lot better than you are now, and the price will be reduced. That kind of thing they could handle. But, of course, Rod Serling wrote the story, and he had to stack the deck against them to make the story work, and that's what he does. These two don't have a prayer. Now that I've seen it again, I think I'm more inclined to not give it a 3, but more likely a 4, like Lynn gave it. Superior acting and an emotional, touching story that can't fail to reach your heart in some way deserves a higher rating. And also, as Lynn pointed out in her review, during the filming, Joseph Schildkraut's real-life wife died, and he insisted on going through with the story anyway. So a lot of that sadness and that hunched-over, defeated look probably comes from what was really happening to him. Very sad story. But over at the good old Internet Movie Database, voters gave it a 7.7 out of 10, and 5 of the 6 who wrote reviews gave it unqualified raves. But as usual, there's always one in every group, and in our group, that's usually me. But this time, my husband and wife totally missed the point of the story, and the wife wrote a review on the board over there, and the first few lines she said the following, believe it or not: "My husband and I love The Twilight Zone, and last year I got him the entire set on DVD for Christmas. We got around to watching this one last night and laughed hysterically when we weren't staring in bewilderment. The concept of this one is actually pretty good. Set in the future, old couple wants to buy new bodies, but the writing reads like a first draft and the acting doesn't help. The old guy stumbles and stammers and never finishes a sentence, only not in a charming way."
That's now, the whole point.
I know. All I can say is that although this one might not necessarily make you cry, it certainly isn't about to make you laugh hysterically. These people truly need help. As for me personally, speaking from only a male perspective, since we have not yet reached the point in 2013 where a magic machine can turn the clock back and make you young and healthy and good-looking again, you better learn to live with it or find an alternative. And that might mean doing what I did, and that is finding and marrying a beautiful, intelligent, and vibrant woman like Lynn, who is a little more than a decade younger than I am, and then getting up each day and not looking in the mirror at myself, but at her. That's the answer. Trust me, that makes getting older a whole lot easier. Back to you, Lynn.
He wants a really good steak dinner tonight. That's why he's...
I want more than steak. I'm thinking of something else, so that's fine.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, anyway, I am going to turn this over to Robert on that note. And, oh, by the way, before Robert, I thank you, Guest 7, for stopping in. So good to see you here. Okay, Robert.
Well, thank you, Lynn. And Bobby, very much enjoyed it. I know you, from reading the review here, I got the review right here, that you did really enjoy this episode. So
it made me cry. It makes me cry.
And very few episodes do. I think me and Dave could both agree to that, couldn't we, Dave?
Well,
the attempts at comedy make me cry, I can tell you that.
We're up to episode 96. I think Bobby's like 6 up to now.
Just wait till we get to Carol Burnett. Anyway.
Please.
That's enough to make you cry.
Well, unfortunately, I not as thrilled as both Lynn and Bobby is about this episode. I mean, it was okay. I give it a 2 for average. I'm going to come right out and say that. The one that really interests me in this whole episode of The Growing Old Together was actually the poker tournament of Holt trying to raise the other half the money for his wife. Now, we played that clip when Lynn was giving a synopsis there. But that's the one I like. And very rarely you're going to find a situation where you're going to have a poker dealer, and especially if you're watching up mob movies and everything else, that, you know, someone's not going to give you your $5,000 back. And that to be someone like that, it must have been set in the future, because that wouldn't exist today when you're especially playing, you know, when you got that much money on the table like that to just, so here, take your $5,000, just call it even, and be thankful just to get out of that room with your life. So that was the part of the episode I really like. I thought that the beginning and ending, here again, we're going character piece. And as previous shows, I'm not that much into character pieces. I like more action in these episodes. And with this one, it kind of, for me, slowed it down a little bit. And that's why I can't give it as much of, you know, a thrilling review as other people will give it. But just the whole idea of brain transference into androids, which, you know, the optimal word was robot.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you say because it slows down?
Yeah, well, just the conversation itself, Lynn, at the beginning and at the end, before we get into the procedure transformation into the body, yeah. It just felt that slow to me in that. And like I said, like five characters in Search of an Exit and some other episodes that we reviewed, it's very much a character piece while, you know, focusing on these two people. And it just, like I said, I like the poker section of that, and I did enjoy that one. The whole thing that this also brings up is, I don't know if you believe in God or religion or whatever, it also kind of brings up a moral situation. And I was kind of at work last night. Unfortunately, this company that I clean for, they work on Saturday. And so I had to go in for like 3 hours or whatever and get it prepared for them for that day. Was thinking, God created people, if you believe in this, with a certain amount of years. And if we remember in the Bible with Abraham, how long Abraham lived and how long Sarah lived, their lifespan was cut down considerably compared to Adam and Eve, which... you know, with the exception of Methuselah, age-wise, how long they live. When you transfer to a different body, do you reset your years? Or, barring accidents, can you truly live those 112 years that the salesperson pretty much stated to them? You know, when you die at a certain time, is that at God's choosing when you die? Or is it the surroundings that causes your early demise, like, you know, toxins in the air and in the water, things like cancer, stuff like that? You know, it kind of brings up that philosophy of things. And when you transfer your mind over, are you actually transferring your soul over as well? Do you leave your soul in the old body? And do you just become... just an automaton, somebody that, you know, you go from body to body and then you truly lose yourself? I mean, you know, there's some philosophy thinking about this episode as well. And that's the great thing about this episode, too, is it has you think. It, you know, Rod and the other people bring out that in you, that, you know, in these episodes, you know, what are the consequences? Well, you know, they realize that it's better just to grow old together. You know, that was the whole purpose of life itself, is you live, you grow old, you die, and then a new life is brought into the mix. How do they control overpopulation with these bodies is another thing. The whole concept of death is to not overpopulate the world and to have people live whatever life they're given. And, I mean, that's what I was kind of thinking about. And that's what happens when you're by yourself for so many hours and you kind of think on things like that. But I don't know if there's ever been an answer to something like that. But that did bring up some questions. And it also kind of sets apart these later movies and TV shows that actually focus on this very idea of cloning, of transference of mind, anti-aging drugs. Ones that I mentioned in my review, and my first one coming up is Star Trek The Next Gen, or Next Generation, Season 2, Episode 6, Schizoid Man. And this one involves a man, a scientist who was dying. His name was Dr. Ian Graves. The Enterprise is called to the planet. He's a very popular cybernetist who discover a secret of mind transference. And it's brought up later on towards the end of Season 7 with an episode called Inheritance about Dr. Soon's wife. And that one, I do remember that episode from Season 7. That was quite an interesting one. So let me go ahead and play that clip from Schizoid Man.
Warp to Captain Picard. Commander Data has left 10 forward. Should I follow?
Negative. I'll handle this myself. He was an expert in cybernetics.
Yes.
Our memorial service may have been premature. What an achievement. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this. And this gives life to thee.
He was working on bridging the gap between man and machine.
Seems he built that bridge. I may be forced to tear it down. I understand your desperation. The shock of learning you were dying, but you have no right to do what you've done.
I have every right, Captain. I am man, he is machine. There is no question who must live and what must die.
What of Data?
Data? Before me, he was nothing. Just a walking tin can with circuits for intestines. Pathetic. Without heart, a man is meaningless.
But you cheated. You have extended your life at the expense of another. Graves, give Data back. Give him back.
Data is dead.
No. He must not be lost. He's not simply an android. He's a life form, entirely unique.
Data is not human. He is
different. Yes. But that does not make him expendable or any less significant. No being is so important that he can usurp the rights of another.
And it's almost like he's going off to that one episode, A Measure of a Man, where Picard was defending Data in that episode. Well, what was interesting was the actor that played Graves. A lot of us remember him as Reg in Max Headroom. He also appeared as Doctor Who, W. Morgan Shepherd, as the older Canton, I believe during Series 6, Dave, the Impossible Astronaut.
Yep, and he reappeared in the second part, I think. I think it was in the second part where he joins them on the beach where they're going to burn the body. I won't say anything more than that. Spoil the episode.
He's a great actor, and his son, who was in Firefly, played the younger Canton. I do remember
that's
that
right.
Too. And bring up another movie, 1992, Free Jack, with Emilio Estevez. If anybody remembered that movie, Mick Jagger was in it as well, about people that are taking at the brink of death before they die. They're taken out of their time and they are used to people who are dying, and rich people have the money they can afford to transfer their brains into a new body that they take from the past, which they call a free jack. And here's the clip for that.
Some rich son of a bitch died to save his mind in a huge computer they call the spiritual switchboard. There is nothing spiritual about that. Sometimes I wonder if the good Lord has forsaken us all. Then they transfer his mind to your body. That's his ticket to immortality.
What do you mean, like a brain transplant?
No, no. A mind transplant. Electronically, your mind will be utterly annihilated.
Never seen a free jack before. Heard about him, sure. That's when I first figured out that's what probably happened to you back then. Seen him on the 2D, sure, but touch one? One I know? One that's alive? Remarkable. Hey, Alex, how do you like my antique ashtray?
Porsche. 67 Porsche.
You're Alex Furlong, all right.
What's that all about?
Natives are restless.
Why do they want me, Brad?
Because you died, man. Spectacularly. Incredible piece of videotape. You should see it sometime. It's because they know exactly where and when you cast that you're a candidate for retrieval. Space-time coordinates are still raw, but they got it perfected fine.
I don't get it. Why me? Why don't they just grab somebody who's alive now?
Take a look at these people, Alex. They've lived half their lives with no ozone layer, sucking up mega doses of carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, mercury, lead, benzene, nuclear waste. Most of them are hooked on drugs that weren't even around in the 20th century. Let's face it, you're a hot property, my boy.
And the only thing missing in the background was a catch screeching as the person was killed. It's kind of funny seeing Mick Jagger as a villain in this movie. But,
kind of funny seeing Mick Jagger anywhere.
I know. Here, come over here and test this for me. See if it works. And my last clip is a movie called The Sixth Day. And this one, again, is about a cloning situation to where we have Arnold, who's back in the movie The Last Stand after being done with his governorship over in California. This was a rare old movie. And he plays a owner of a helicopter place in the future where cloning is, so they kind of have a little leeway with they're allowed to clone pets in this movie, but it kind of sets up for cloning of humans, which is outlawed in this movie. And also a Twilight Zone alumni, Robert Duvall, was in this movie as well. He played a scientist. And in this clip, you'll hear him towards the end giving the explanation of what happened to Schwarzenegger's character, Alex.
Drucker, you gave $100 million to help the Weir Clinic. Dr. Weir, is it true that you're trying to get the six-day laws repealed?
Dr. Weir is interested in medicine, not politics.
Mr. Drucker, the protesters outside claim that you run Repet at a loss in order to soften people up to the idea of human cloning.
You know, we shouldn't forget that not so long ago, there were literally almost no more fish left in the ocean. And half the world's population faced a very real threat of hunger. Our cloning technology helped turn that around. The extremists don't like to admit that they'd rather the world went hungry than eat cloned fish, so instead they keep yelling about human cloning.
Do you think the human cloning laws should be changed?
Suppose a 10-year-old boy lies in a hospital bed dying of liver cancer. Thanks to Dr. Weir's work, we can save that boy. Now in the next bed lies another 10-year-old boy whose parents love him just as much, only this child has an inoperable brain tumor, and you cannot clone a brain. The only way to save him would be to clone the whole person. Now, how do you tell that boy's parents that we can save the firstborn. But the research that would have saved their son, it wasn't done because of a law that was passed by frightened politicians a decade ago.
This is Michael Drucker's. Now, a sin coding contains everything in a person's memory. And this is what Drucker saw and heard just before he died. You don't become one of the richest men in the world without making enemies, so we back up his mind religiously.
Okay. No, I'm about to get on my snowboard. Hey! Hey! It's your shock about to call Marshall right now. Tell me. Tell me.
No, you don't have to
be sorry! The anti-cloning fundamentalist killed everyone on board.
Should have been me.
Well, we thought it was you. Drucker even mentioned your name. So, we used your DNA and your sin coding to clone you. To resurrect Drucker, we had to cover up the accident.
You're talking.
We cloned everyone. By the time we figured out you switched places, it was too late.
Access denied. Invalid thumbprint.
They're trying to kill me.
Because there are two Adam Gibsons. And that's proof that humans are being cloned, which makes you very dangerous.
That one was kind of an okay movie. With that, you have the transference of the mind from one clone to the other. It very much connects with this one, even though they're not cloned. It's just the transference of mind from this one. So that's the only reason I can only give it a 2. I wish I could give it more, but it was okay episode for me. And I do believe I pass it back over to Dave, correct?
Yeah, Dave. Dave next.
Okay. Not a great deal to say, because prior to the recording started, I hadn't managed to re-watch this episode, The Trade-Ins, recently, although I have watched it in the past. Just to remind those listening to the recording later and not that familiar, it's Series 3, Episode 69, aired April the 13th, 1962. And it's quite... sad that what Bobby said about the actor Joseph, who played Joseph, the actor Joseph, who he said he'd lost his wife only recently. He himself only died less than 2 years after this episode was made, age 67. He was 65 there, playing, of course, a 72-year-old, and I think the woman was supposed to be 76, but they do overdo it with this makeup because that woman looked at least 86 to me.
She was about 10 years older than him in that clip. In real life. In real life, she was about 10 years older.
Right. I've got a feeling... I watched a little two-minute clip on YouTube, and it was the bit where they were in the consulting room. But you may well be right. But the point is that he definitely was only supposed to be 72. But they made him look like... he looked like Mr. Chips, you know. Well, I'm doing that with the grey hair and that. So he really did, they overdid that. So anyway, that's the point. The actress at the time, I think she died, I think she was 71, the actress who played her. Well, I'm going to do my usual, the double bite of the cherry, because it reminded me, and I had to look it up to find out which episode it was, but it's in Season 5, Episode 135, The Long Morrow. And that's a story that takes the flip side of this story. I'll put the link in the room just in case people want to read about it. But basically, it's about an astronaut who goes on a 40-year trip from Earth on a mission. And he's going to be in suspended animation on the trip. Right. So his girlfriend decides she'd be old by the time he gets back. So she goes into suspended animation. Mm-hmm. And well, I won't say any more because it'll spoil the story. But
I think Marriott Hartley or something is in that.
Yeah, that's right. It's basically a rehash of this story. Mm-hmm. So that's the two bites of the cherry thing that aired on January the 10th, 64, a couple of years later. So that was that. If I was going to mention clips, I think Robert picked some good ones, but I'd almost think of the young boy. Should I use the word boy? Is that the correct word to you? The little life form in AI, looking for his blue angel.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Wanted to be human. Also the... what's the other one? I forgot. He's got Starman with
Jeff Bridges.
Where he creates a body out of the, you know, mm-hmm. from the comb of the deceased husband of the... the woman in the story, and uses that uses that DNA. About the thing about the things that Robert said, I think those are all valid. I would argue, of course, that if they are in now a young body and a working body, then they're not necessarily going to be, a weight on the state, because presumably, you know, they can learn and find their own way in the world. So it's not like you're going to be burdened with lots of old people who can't take care of themselves, you know, with the genetic time bomb of having lots of old people living to 110, 115 or whatever, because they would be, in effect, you know, rejuvenated and be able to go out and work for another 60 years. And then I suppose the argument is that if they're sensible and earn another, you know, earn money in that 60 years, they can buy another body at the end of it. Now, I was trying to rack my brains as well and look up, but I haven't been able to do it. But there was a recent film that came out, science fiction one, and it was something to do with people using their time. They were paid in minutes. In other words, they lived their lives.
Yeah.
And the work that they did bought them more minutes in their lifetime. And for the life of me, I can't remember the title.
Is that a new movie that's out? New movie?
It came out about 2-3 years ago, maybe.
Oh.
It was time something or another. I can't remember.
Yeah, but basically what it is they it became a rat race because, did you spend your money on your food or buying a fancy watch? Or did you have that money enter into your time bank? So in other words, you could work for 5 years, but get your life extended 10 years.
Huh.
And it was how hard you worked, which, of course, was it was basically a reimagining of Logan's Run. When, of course, people, again, that's another one that could have been used at the age of 25 or whatever, they would go into the ceremonial centre, you know, when their hands started blinking and it went black. And then they were supposed to be rejuvenated. They went into this circular thing where they rose up into the air and then they were zapped. But in theory, they were supposed to be reborn. But, of course, I won't say, of course, but you know what I mean. The idea was that was just a way of keeping the population down in the enclosed city environment with its limited capacity. Or did these people really come back as reborn? And that, of course, is part and parcel of the storyline. And one other thing I'd mention, and then I'll hand back, is the couples, the love in old age, and I think Bobby mentioned it, how society would look down on, you know, a couple where one's like 40, 50 years older than the other, and it would be difficult. Reminded me of the very first Highlander film, where Conor MacLeod in Scotland with his young wife, they spend quite a good part of the film where he lives his life, because he doesn't age as an immortal, but his wife slowly ages. You see them working on the croft field, and then one day you see her walking old, and suddenly she's become an old woman, and she gets to her deathbed, and a very sad scene where she says, "Connor, will you do a favour for me?" "What's that, my love?" And it's my Bonnie or something. "Will you light a candle on my birthday?" You know, because she knows he's going to live forever. He's not aged all the time they've been together. And there's this very poignant moment where he said that he'll remember and always go wherever he is, he'll find a church and light a candle in her memory. And that's a lovely... Yeah?
I found that movie for you. It's called End Time. It came out in 2011, had Justin Timberlake in it.
Justin Timberlake.
When Will Salas is falsely accused of murder, he must figure out a way to bring down a system where time is money, literally, enabling the wealthy to live forever. While
what's
the
it
poor
called?
Like Will have to beg, borrow, and steal. In Time.
In Time?
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to watch that. Cool.
Okay, but other than that, I'm not sure I can give it a rating. I've got a feeling on memory I'd give it a 3, maybe on rewatching a 2.5. Let's go down the middle, 2.5.
All right. That's cool. All right. Well, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, although The Twilight Zone is best known, you know, for fantasy and suspense, You know, we sometimes get the sentimental, heartwarming story, and instead of a frightening tale, we get one that's sweet, but also sad. And yet I'll take the sweet and sad any day over this terrible comedic offerings that they've done. And of course, the fear of growing old and of death itself is a recurrent theme in the series. I think it's used almost as often as time travel and alien invasion stories. I'm trying to think of the... Oh, yeah, 16mm Shrine. You know, the aging actress who can't accept getting old. And Nothing in the Dark. An old woman who becomes a recluse due to her fear of death. But, no, I found this episode to be interesting and intriguing. John and Marie Holt, they want to be young again. There just happens to be a futuristic company that can take their old bodies and replace them with young ones. And they can start their lives over again as a couple in their mid-20s. And they can begin their wonderful courtship again, do all the things that they're now too old to do, just as they did years ago. And it's quite obvious to me, at least, and I'm sure to many other people, that after 50 years of marriage, they're still deeply in love and completely devoted to each other. And to me, it's a very moving situation.
Sorry, can I just interrupt there?
Sure.
I just realized one aspect of this that just dawns on me now, because that's how thick I am.
Sure.
This story, in some sense, and I think Bobby might agree with me on this, might not hold up unless you consider that they are a childless couple. Because what would happen if suddenly, you know, you go and visit your children and, you know, they're in the mid-50s and suddenly you appear at the door and you're in your mid-20s and yet you're going to live and see your children die of old age.
Yeah, that brings up that good point of the Torchwood episode where the plane of people come back in time from the rift in time and the father sees his son in an old folks home. Remember that episode?
Right.
Well, I thought of that too. Like, what? Now they said 98% of couples. In the episode, the guy says 98% of couples are perfectly happy with the procedure, and I guess 2% take it back. Well, the 2%, you have to wonder why. You had to wonder why 2% of the people weren't happy, and maybe part of it was that aspect that. I can't believe that every person or couple that went to have this done was childless. So you have to wonder, well, we're going to be 20, 30 years old again, whatever. Maybe they had 22-year-old kids. Well, you're going to come back as their parents who are 3 years older than them or
well,
the same
they,
age as them?
The only people who have this operation are well in the 70s, so they've got to have had their children 40 years ago plus.
Right, that's true. But, you know, still they're coming back, then they'd be coming back younger than the
younger, that's
right.
What I mean. And
right.
That would
younger
be difficult to see, you know.
Exactly. So they'd be coming back younger than their children. That makes no sense. I mean, how do you, maybe that's the 2% of the people that couldn't deal with it. The kids said, no, I can't have parents that are younger than me, you know. But, you know, and yeah, I mean, that is the crazy part of it. And I guess that's why they didn't indicate in the
either way,
that
yeah.
Had kids, yeah. And but considering how much they adored each other, which obviously they did, why they didn't have kids, but they didn't indicate that one way or the other. So I'm assuming that was intentional. But Joseph Schildkraut, I have to say, he was remarkably touching as John Holt. The makeup job is pretty obvious. I'll agree with that. But that doesn't detract from his wonderful performance at all. I mean, I love the man. I think he's wonderful. I loved him in Death's Head Revisited. I mean, as the Holocaust victim. I mean, he was wonderful in that, and he was wonderful in this. And, you know, I mean, take a good look at him. When he winces from his pain, you know, when he's sitting there at the poker table, even when he's sitting there talking to the representative, and also the way he looks at Marie with such love and tenderness. In my opinion, that's more than acting. That's embracing your role and putting your whole self into it. kind of like what Daniel Day-Lewis does. You know, I mean, it's just putting your whole self into it. And what's even more remarkable, as Bobby had pointed out, Chill Kraut's wife died just a few days into production of this episode. And rather than hold up the filming, he wanted to complete the scenes. And so, you know, that might have helped with some of those sobbing scenes there. And now
he's probably an actor that got into his role, just like he brought up Daniel Day-Lewis, who's mm-hmm. won 3 Academy Awards. It's known that he gets into who he's going to portray. And it's 2-3 months down the road. It takes
and
him
he doesn't
before
even
he can
offset. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even offset. I mean, like when he did, when Daniel Day-Lewis did Lincoln, and when he did even the role he did as Bill the Butcher in Gangs of New York, he played the role off screen as well. Mm-hmm. He gets so into his character that he becomes.
He learned to be a butcher.
Yeah, exactly. He gets into his characters on and off screen, and he is just absolutely tremendous. I think he's probably one of the greatest actors we've ever had. I
love Joe Kraut's probably the same way. He's probably, you know, Death Ed's Revisited. He was very good in that role. So.
Oh my God, he was like, you really thought that this guy had suffered like that. I mean, I thought he was fabulous. Now and Alma Platt, who played his wife, she was a real joy to watch. I mean, she was wonderful as Marie. You know, she was a woman who would gladly spend 100 centuries with the husband she adores. You know, and she had that, like, totally endearing smile. You know, you had to love her smile. She was like the sweetest little woman. You had to love her. And Edson Stroll, he played the young John Holt who came out, you know, in the new body. And he remained devastatingly handsome into his later years. If you folks go to IMDb, you can see what he looks like now. And, he was also, if you have forgotten, he was the man who met Donna Reed at the end of Eye of the Beholder. He was the ugly guy. Yeah, he was the ugly guy who met ugly Donna Reed to take them to the new, Robert?
Their own little island off
their own
the
little
side.
Village.
Yeah.
Yeah, the village at the end of Eye of the Beholder. Yeah, the two real.
He just passed away about a year ago. He was 82.
Who, Edson? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, he was a beautiful man. Yeah, he was beautiful up until his later years, and he was the one at the end of Eye of the Beholder, the dog that took Donna Reed's dog to but what I liked was he turned in a great performance as well, because the look of shock on his face when he realized how hard Alma was taking the situation, that was jolting when you looked at that. The shock on his face was fantastic. It was like, oh my God, he is really absolutely devastated, you know? And the guy who played the card shark, Theodore Marcuse, you know, and the guy that sympathized with John at the table, and he was the Russian ambassador into Serve Man. He was also good. He's a very good actor. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it would be pretty cool if we could trade in our old bodies for new ones and start new lives if we wanted to. But I don't think any of us will be around to see such a phenomenon. I like I said, I wondered why such a loving couple as the Holtz didn't have any children. But I think that was intentional for the episode. You know,
and Bear Friend Ron brings up a good point, even though he is kind of joking there at the bottom there.
What is that?
About Donna Reed and Robert Reed. You forgot Rock Hudson, too, there, Bear Friend Ron. Anyway, that does bring up the point, too, about, you know, at the time of this episode aired, what about the transference of a man into a woman or a woman to a man's body? That is some consideration, too.
Yeah, well, that would have never been touched on back then, but it mm-hmm. would be now. Now, if they were to do that episode in this day and age, they might, you know, touch on something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably still a long way, off.
Yep.
Well, in his promo for this episode, Rod Serling said that it's my personal feeling that of the various story areas we've tackled in the Twilight Zone, this has the most import and carries with it the most poignance. And he was right about that. It is poignant. Great casting, terrific acting, and a wonderful story. So I rate it a 4 because I just am always very, very touched by it. And I love Sheryl Crow. I love Velma Platt in it. And, you know, just really good to me. So does anybody else have anything to add on this?
Yeah, Felix gave it a 3, and 4 is not out of the question, he said.
Yeah, we'll go with 3.5 for Felix then.
And Ron has to be different. Yeah.
3.3. Yeah, Ron's giving it a 3.3. Ron, you are such a rascal. He's such a little rascal. 3.3. You know what, Ron? I'm moving you up to a 3.5. Well, I know you made it 3.3. I'll move you up to a 3.5. He's a rascal. But anyway, 3.5 is right for Felix, he said. Okay, cool. All right. So we've got our ratings across the board here, but mostly like 2, 2.5, 3 to 4. Okay, we're good. Well, nobody gave it a poor or a bad, and that's good. I mean, it's not a bad episode. I can't imagine anyone would give it really a bad rating except those idiots on IMDb that Bobby mentioned. But, you know.
No, it's not. It's a good episode. But
yeah,
like I said, it's just an average for me.
That's okay. Average is cool, but not poor or lousy. I mean, come on. It's really good. Bobby gave it a 4. He originally gave it a 3, and he moved it up to a 4, Ron.
That's correct.
That's correct. Ron was asking. So we're good here. And all right, so what we're looking at now, God, I really hate, thanks, Dave. Thank you, Dave, for reminding us. All right.
Well,
so,
Lynn, let me take you out of your misery, and I'll bring Rod on to explain the next episode.
Thank you.
Take a rest.
Rod Serling, creator of The Twilight Zone, we'll tell you about next week's story after this message. And now, Mr. Serling.
Next week on The Twilight Zone, we tell a story that we think might prove a rather haunting little item in the scheme of things. It tells of a small Mexican boy and a visitor from another planet. And it tells further what happens when this extraterrestrial traveler is faced with some of the less personable instincts of human beings, like fear, superstitions, and intolerance. Our story is called The Gift.
Yeah, we'll need a siesta after that. Anyway.
And no gift. Well, it's not really a gift at all. Anyway, 2 weeks from now, on Saturday, March 23rd, we will be doing a discussion on The Gift. Well, as much of a discussion as we can have on it.
And can I just add in there as well that for that episode, many states in the United States will have moved on to daylight saving time. The same time changes on the 10th tomorrow. So
yes.
If you listen to the show from either, I think it's Arizona or Hawaii that don't change their time zones are, from other parts of the world, you might find it's on an hour earlier than you usually think.
Oh, you are absolutely right. Yeah, because we change at midnight tonight.
Spring ahead, people.
Yeah, spring ahead. So now it goes at midnight tonight. We move up to 1 a.m. And, yeah, you're right. Thank you,
Dave.
One
less hour to drink. Darn.
Damn it. Oh, there's always something to ruin my life. I've about had it here. Well, anyway, I just want to thank Ron. Ron, I'm applauding you, my friend Ron. And Felix. Applauding Felix. And, of course, Dave and Robert and my wonderful husband, Bobby. And I'm going to applaud myself. All right.
Pat yourself on the back. Good job, Lynn.
And I am going to say, have a wonderful rest of the weekend, folks. I love talking to you and reading your stuff and seeing you all here. And Felix says, yes! Yes, Felix. So we'll see you in 2 weeks for the gift. All right. Okay, everybody.
Okay,
have a
now just
great...
remember, calm, yeah. Lynn. Calm. Just relax.
Calm. Have a great weekend, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.